Now I have a video to share with you to take us into our message today.
What made you start dancing?
Because of my sister. She was a girl. So my mom decided she's the one to get all the dancing lessons. So every Saturday my mother would take her. Once in a while she'd take me along.
How old were you?
4? 5? I'd sit there all eager and I'm watching Cisco pit-a-pat. Said, I can do that. I can do that. Knew every step right off the bat. Said, I can do that. I can do that. One morning, sis won't go to dance class. I grabbed her shoes and tights and oh.
But my foot's too small, so I stuffed her shoes with extra socks.
Run 7 blocks in nothing flat. Hell, I can do that. That I can do. Give a man some room.
Well, I know how much you miss it when I don't open with a story, so I found a story for today that I wish to share with you. And it was about this woman who was looking at herself in the mirror, and her birthday was just a few days away, and her husband of 20-some years asked her, "What would you like for your birthday?" And she answered him, "I would like to be 8 again." Well, a few days later on her birthday, he got up at the crack of dawn and he prepared her a breakfast of Cocoa Pops. And then he whisked her off into the car and took her to Adventureland. And he put her on every ride in that amusement park, including the Death Slide, the Wall of Fear, and the Screaming Roller Coaster. What a day. 5 hours of pure excitement. Ah, but the day was not over. From there, he took her to McDonald's, where he treated her to a Happy Meal with extra fries and an ice cream cone. Then he hauled her off to the theater to see a Disney movie. He bought her her favorite candy, M&M's, and he also got her a large tub of popcorn and a soda. What an adventure. Finally, she wobbled home with her husband and collapsed into bed. He was so smug, he walked over to her with a big grin on his face that ran from ear to ear, and he asked her, "Well, dear, how did it feel to be 8 again?" And very slowly, she opened her eyes, turned toward him, and her expression changed. She looked at him and said, "You old fool, I was talking about my dress size." Well, the story's on topic. I opened that story today because our talk topic is aha. But this is Pentecost Sunday, and we cannot talk about Pentecost without talking about birthdays. Pentecost is celebrated by almost all of the 2.3 billion Christians in the world as the birth of Christianity. I would deviate from that a bit by making just a slight distinction. I would say that Pentecost is the birth of the church in the truest, most meaningful sense of the word. Regardless, I would argue that Pentecost ranks, or should rank, extremely high in terms of significant church holidays. In fact, I would make the case that it should be regarded with as much prominence as Christmas and Easter. Christmas is significant because in the person of Jesus, the acknowledgement is made of God with skin on. Easter, of course, is very significant because it celebrates the victory of the Christ essence over absolutely everything, including death. But Pentecost brings with it a very practical, very pragmatic message, a very unity message. It certainly is a message about the workings of spirit, but it also is a powerful message that's all about you, all about me, about all of us in a very real way. And hopefully, this dot will be connected as we get more into the story. I have to give you a bit of historical background. Pentecost is the Greek word for the Feast of Weeks, a very prominent holiday in the calendar of ancient Israel, celebrating the law of Sinai, or the handing down of the Ten Commandments, 50 days after the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. It's a springtime holiday. It also is regarded as the Festival of First Fruits, an acknowledgement of God's abundance that is constantly being bestowed upon each and every one of us. It's a holiday that is still celebrated today among the Jews as Shavuot. And certainly, at the time that this passage from Acts was written, which would have been between 110 and 120 in the current era, it would have been known that this was a holiday that would bring Jews from all over the neighboring world into Jerusalem. There are two things, then, that are worth pointing out. The writing of Acts sets the stage for Pentecost on this important established feast day, and in doing so, sends a message that it's no longer about the letter of the law, but rather it is all about the spirit or true fulfillment of the law in the hearts of humankind. And that's all humankind. Through the presence in the story of people from all over the known world, the writer tells us that the message is for everybody and not just limited to a few. It was a message, an invitation to Jews and Gentiles alike. You do not need to speak a specific language or belong to a select group to be included in the message. Everyone is a divine, beloved child of the Father. It's a message of diversity, radical inclusivity, and not exclusivity. We learn from the second chapter in the book of Acts that the apostles are holed up in an upper room somewhere in Jerusalem. They had to have been pretty anxious and very much afraid. Jesus is gone. It wasn't all that long ago that they had witnessed the execution of Jesus, and there had to be a real concern among them that it just was possible that they could be next. Furthermore, they had just said goodbye to Jesus, who had been so involved in their lives for years. They had to have been in that place of, okay, now what? We learned from the readings that they tried to go about their business. They understood that they needed to replace Judas, so they picked a replacement by drawing lots. They understood the significance of restoring their number to 12. But they did something else. They prayed. Metaphysically, coming together in an upper room represents moving into a higher consciousness, a greater state of awareness, in order to determine just what were they supposed to be doing now. This is not unlike what we do every Sunday. And according to the scripture, they get a very dramatic response from Spirit. The Spirit that Jesus had promised he would send. Because Spirit showed up in the midst of a loud howling winds making great noise and appeared visibly as a tongue of fire above their heads. That noise that occurred was so loud that people came around trying to find out just what the heck was going on. And it was in this dramatic setting that that question of what is ours, what is mine to do was answered. The apostles had a really powerful aha moment. And in that moment, they understood just what Jesus meant when he said, "All that I do, you will do, and more." And just like the dancer in the opening video, they responded by saying, "I can do that." Earlier on, I dared to suggest that the Feast of Pentecost, in a very real way, was closer to home for us than even Christmas or Easter. These players, these 12 apostles, were regular guys. They were fishermen and farmers and tradespeople, and even a tax collector. And not only that, throughout the Gospels, they are repeatedly portrayed as insecure, jealous, inept, lazy, unbelieving, and on occasion, egotistical. They were extraordinarily ordinary. And I can't speak for any of you, but I sure as heck can relate to these people, to these guys. But somehow, in some way, they were filled with Spirit. Somehow, in some way, those walls of insecurity and doubt, worry and fear were made to crumble. And they arrived at a very special knowing of their own Christ essence. It sounds like double talk. But what they came to know and understand is that the Christ that they just said goodbye to was very much alive within themselves. It's important to point something out at this point. All of those things that they were worried about, all of those things that they were afraid of, didn't go away. As it turns out, in fact, several of the apostles eventually would end up being tortured and martyred, dying very painful deaths. No, their fears didn't become any less threatening. But in this newfound spirit awareness, those fears really became inconsequential and meaningless. Think about that for a moment. What is it that you are most afraid of? Who or what is your biggest boogeyman? Are you afraid of getting sick? Are you afraid of dying? Are you maybe afraid of being alone or penniless? Are you afraid of being laughed at or ridiculed or scorned? Are you afraid of the unknown? Whatever it may be, it isn't likely to just evaporate and disappear. It's not going to go away easily. But what if you could make it so that whatever it is that terrifies you is no longer an issue or an influence in your life? What if you could, just with a change of attitude, render your greatest fear absolutely powerless? Not possible? Well, just about every child goes through a phase of being afraid of the dark. I know my daughters did, and I remember as a boy, I did. Did you? And if you did, are you still sleeping with a light on? Or did you somehow dismiss that fear of the dark? I used to be scared to death of bees. I mean, they terrified me. If I saw a bee, I would start running in a crazy zigzag pattern as if I were being chased by an alligator. And I'm not talking about when I was 8 years old. One time when I was in my late teens, a bee started buzzing around and I took off without looking. And I ended up crashing into this poor elderly lady and I bowled her over. I mean, it really wasn't pretty. She was bruised and really shaken up. Today, bees no longer faze me. I don't know. Maybe it was that incident that, even a few years later, woke me up. Of course, bees are still there. Bees are still capable of stinging me. But they just don't bother me anymore. Anything of any real significance that I have ever realized in my life involved overcoming a real fear. I was scared to death to go to ministerial school. I was afraid of the loss of income. I was afraid that I would be too old by the time I was ordained. I was afraid that I didn't have what it takes to be a minister, let alone a decent minister. And here's one for you. When Reverend Jan retired, I was scared to death that I wasn't going to measure up, that I was going to fail miserably as your minister. And I still recall that first Sunday after Reverend Jan left. I shared with Rose before the service that I was absolutely terrified. And lovingly she said, "Why? We got your back." Rose didn't realize it, but that day she was a tongue of fire. And by the way, metaphysically, a tongue of fire represents divine illumination. On that first Pentecost, nearly 2,000 years ago, the apostles were filled with spirit that elevated their consciousness. And again, those words that Jesus had spoken to them came into fruition. "All that I do, you will do and more." And so they poured out into the streets of Jerusalem and they spread the good news, the gospel of the Christ, alive in the world. They were Galileans, but their words were understood by Parthians and Medes and Elamites, by people from Mesopotamia, Egypt, and many other foreign lands. See, this is the splendor, the wonder, the magic of spirit. Spirit is not bound by language, race, age, or borders, or any other categories that the world uses to distinguish as lines that we're not supposed to cross. But you show up in your Christ presence. You manifest kindness, understanding, compassion, acceptance, and love to anyone. They'll know it. They will feel it. And really, not a single word needs to be spoken. By the way, early on in the last 14 months or the year plus of the mask, I was frustrated because when I smiled at someone, they did not know it. So I tried to learn how to smile with my eyes or by tilting my head a bit or nodding. You can do this, you know. Give it a try. The mouth is just part of the smile. Your eyes can be windows to your heart. Going back to this scripture passage, of course there were cynics and skeptics in response to the apostles. They were so upbeat to the point of being giddy. And some looked at them and said, "Ah, they're just drunk." But Peter sets them straight by pointing out, "Hey, it's 9 o'clock in the morning here. You know, it's much too early for that." The truth was that they were high, but not on alcoholic spirits, but on spirit itself. It was a very successful day for them. They ended up baptizing 3,000 people. Allowing for inflation, that would be about 3 million people today. The point is that the message went viral. Ah, at long last, a silver lining to the coronavirus. Because it helps us to understand something. Over the past year, we have come to learn that a virus spreads when it's airborne, when it is projected outward from within and is breathed in by someone else. The apostles may have been surrounded by and immersed in spirit, but the spirit that they shared that day came from within. It's exactly what made the message so powerful and so embracing and so accepting. This truly was the birth of the church. If the message of the Spirit was not shared by those very ordinary folks like you and me, Christianity probably would have become a passing fad that disappeared early on in the first century. What will it look like 1,000 years from now? Or even 100 years from now? Or even next year? Well, like anything else that is alive, consciousness has to be fed to grow. And so our call today is no different than it was for those 12 guys sitting in that upper room 2,000 years ago. And just like them, yes, we have our self-doubts. We have our lack of confidence. And we have our fears. And just like them, we sit and we just wonder at times, what is ours to do? And maybe in a sense, going out and showing our Christ light and unconditionally loving everyone, maybe even a greater challenge than it was way back then. So, what do we do more specifically? We have to go into that upper room and pray. But this also has to serve as a metaphor. We cannot compartmentalize our own divine nature. Going off to work does not mean leaving that upper room. It does not mean putting the Christ on hold, not even when we're doing those really mundane things like cutting the grass or washing the dishes or vacuuming the floors. Our occupancy in that upper room has to be not just occasionally, but constantly. Every word, every action, every thought needs to be a mindful prayer. Those aha moments aren't easy to come by. But there is an experience of Pentecost waiting to awaken in each of us. And I can't think of a better time than now to get into the Spirit by saying yes to Spirit. It's Pentecost. Happy birthday to each and every one of you. Make a spiritual affirmation as you blow out your birthday candle. And now let's take this to prayer and meditation. It's time for us to adjourn to that upper room.